Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable, hosted by Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Dorothy is a nationally recognized benefits and compliance consultant and group health broker. Here, you'll listen to industry experts break down the latest news and trends in employee benefits, healthcare reform, regulations and compliance, all designed to empower executive decisions.
Welcome to the Benefits Executive Roundtable. I'm your host, Dorothy Koshu, President of Advanced Benefit Consulting, and I want to welcome you to Season 5 of the Benefits Executive Roundtable. I want to welcome my guest today, Dr. Keith Smith of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. You know, you have a very unique story. We talked about this last June. I heard about you from the first time, of course, with the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals, our annual convention, when you were a keynote speaker. And I thought it was a really unique topic for a doctor or a surgeon, you know, to address. And I, of course, talked to you after the fact, and I was very impressed with you. And you were the first one I've heard that can talk about true cost containment and transparency well before the law required it. And what made it even more surprising was that you were a provider, a surgical center. So why don't we just start from the beginning? Can you tell our listeners about, you know, how your experience was when you started working in what we call normal or regular hospitals earlier in your career? I mean, what was that like? What was your experience like with hospital pricing and transparency or lack thereof? If you don't mind, just tell us your story from the beginning.
Okay, thank you. And thanks again for having me. I'm an anesthesiologist and started my practice, private practice in 1990 and had a traditional practice. I worked at hospitals just like everybody else works at and had just kind of a normal experience filing claims and working with insurance companies. But in 1992, we got a real wake-up call when the government, which is terribly heavy-handed, became even more so with the resource-based relative value scale. And it became real clear to me that what had been building up to that point, about which I was unaware, finally landed. And the federal government decided that they could place a price on every service that physicians rendered, period. I mean, and that's what they did. And all the prices were wrong. The normal prices emerge from competitive activity. And these were prices imposed top down. So I got a good look in the hospitals at the effect that that had. And Medicare decided to underpay for many services, and those services became scarce. And they decided to overpay for some services, and those services became very easy to obtain. But my services as an anesthesiologist were cut drastically. The surgeons that I worked with, their Medicare fees were cut drastically. While our fees were cut, we noticed the hospitals adding on administrative staff. We noticed the hospitals adding on wings. We noticed the hospitals building onto their emergency rooms. There was a crane out in front of everyone. And we noticed the hospitals getting very aggressive with physicians that normally and in the past they had to cater to. The whole attitude changed. And I think that the hospital administrators recognized this is a weak moment for private practice medicine, and this is our chance. So our fees fell, and hospitals continued to thrive. And in the old days, you could go down to medical records and look at what the hospitals financially were doing to patients. And that's when we began to realize that we were accomplices. We were actually enabling a theft where the hospitals really were preying on patients. The hospitals had become financial predators like they'd never been in the past. Well, I didn't sign up for that. I believe in mutually beneficial exchange and the golden rule. I became a physician to help people, not to be an accessory to a crime. So unable to change anything at any of the hospitals where I worked, whose prices were soaring while our prices were falling, I realized the only way I could continue to actually be a doctor and feel good about it was to get out and really control and own the institution where I worked. So a surgery center became available that had been terribly mismanaged by a large corporation, and a like-minded anesthesiologist and I bought it. And that was the beginning of the Surgery Center of Oklahoma in 1997. So I started my practice as a cardiac and pediatric anesthesiologist in 1990, and in 1997 walked away with no idea about whether or not I was going to go broke or not.
Right, right. And that's a big risk, especially for physicians, you know, you're, let's face it. I say this from personal experience, because my own brother-in-law is a physician. Physicians are your doctors. You're not administrators. You're not business owners. You are business owners in a lot of cases, but they don't teach you basic business principles when you go to medical school, at least not back in the day. I don't know if they do today or not, but they don't really teach you a lot of business stuff. They just teach you how to practice medicine, correct? I mean, that's
right.
This is a different animal for you.
Yeah, and I'm a free market guy. Always have been. That's the whole concept of mutually beneficial exchange is what the free market is made of. And so I had read enough economics by that time that I decided to leave, that I knew nothing the federal government was doing was personal. It was mistaken. And maybe it was designed to run physicians out of private practice, just make it too darn hard for them. But I'd read enough economics by then to know, where do prices come from? What do they mean? What's the difference between one person's view on value and another person's? I mean, the whole concept of value being subjective, not objective, is one of the primary tenets of the Austrian School of Economics. And I have to hand it to Lou Rockwell and the people at the Mises Institute that everyone should check out. That really is where I sunk my teeth into what are the economic ideas that can help me survive or thrive in an environment where I was basically existing in a non-free market cesspool.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think your background and the fact that you educated yourself is very impressive. I do want to say that, because you had enough to deal with, just like I said, being a doctor, being a physician, being an anesthesiologist. So obviously you weren't happy with the healthcare system and you decided to do something about it. Can you tell us briefly, and we'll get into it a little bit more later on, but what did you do from the get-go?
Well, from the get-go, I mean, we walked out, we had about 12 surgeons who were loyal to us, who loved the anesthesia care that we provided to their patients, and they walked out with us. They followed us. So we had a kind of a merry band of 12, rebel surgeons and two maverick anesthesiologists, and that's how we started. It was a very small group. And we got started, and it was very clear early on that we were going to endure attack after attack by the insurance companies, by the big carriers, by the hospitals, by the state agencies that they weaponized with bribes at the state capitol. There were federal attacks. There were attacks against us at the federal level. And so we had a lot to contend with, and I knew we would have to fight. I knew we were going to be underdogs, but I don't really look back at that time with much nostalgia. I look back at that time, and I just begin to feel physically exhausted, because I remember what it was like to just fight and never, ever stop. We fortunately had some help. There were some legislators in Oklahoma at the state legislature that saw us as underdogs, and they saw us as victims of the just huge corporate machine. And they kept some arrows that would have killed us from hitting us. We had to sue the Oklahoma State Health Department. Now, we're still the only entity that they regulate that has ever sued them. and we won. And their surrender is framed on my office wall. But it took a lot of guts, frankly, to sue the department, the agency that held our license over our head. But we really didn't feel like we had any choice. They essentially were weaponized by the Oklahoma Hospital Association to come secure all of the medical records for patients we had treated in the year 2000. And none of the patients we treated gave their consent to the release of their records.
Wow.
And that's what I told them. And they said, well, we don't have to have their consent. And we said, well, you can't have them. And they said, well, then you're closed. And they said, well, we'll get an injunction. We'll see you in court. And they surrendered. It turned out they did not have the statutory authority to collect this information in the first place. But that's what the state agencies do when they're under the thumb of the huge corporate machine. They do their bidding, and they allow themselves to be weaponized and attack, you know, whoever the big hospital, big carrier pit bulls say attack. And so we had a small kind of merry band that came out. We had no insurance contracts. We were quoting prices over the phone. We quickly found out our prices were 1/10 or less what the hospitals were charging for the very same services. Patients could buy their surgery at our facility for less than their deductible and copay in network at one of the big hospitals. So I was able to sharpen my pencil and really figure out, you know, what does it cost to do a cruciate ligament repair? What does it cost to do a tonsillectomy?
And what a concept. What a concept.
Yeah. Well, I had to in order to compete, and I had to in order to quote these prices over the phone. You know, if I was wrong on the low side, we were out of business.
Right.
If I was wrong on the high side, we ran the patients off. So I had some boundaries, and I cut my teeth in that out-of-network sort of world. But we always told patients what they were going to pay us when they arrived.
I want to talk more about that, because I like that whole part of what you did, the full transparency. Let's talk about that for just a moment. You haven't listened to my podcast in the past, but I'll just, for history, just so that you're aware, I've probably done at least a dozen podcasts over the years on price transparency and related things. So our listeners are very used to my talking about the need for price transparency, right? And I've been preaching this since way before it went into law on the federal side. Let's talk about your full transparency in pricing, and what are you doing now versus what were you doing then? How is it different, and how does it work?
Well, in the beginning days, and again, we started in 1997, I was just quoting the surgery center fee over the phone. And sometimes, you know, we would quote the anesthesia fee if the patient was a true cash pay. But otherwise, as an anesthesiologist, I filed a claim with their insurance out of network, and the surgeon filed a claim for their professional fee out of network. And then I just quoted the surgery center fee over the phone. And typically it's the institutional charges that get patients into trouble with balance billing. It's not physician fees. Physician fees are very low in comparison to the institutional fees. So we started just by quoting over the phone. And then if a patient was a true cash payer, I would just call the surgeon and ask them how much they wanted. And I would throw that in and create a bundled episode of care price and quote that over the phone. And so we made a list, because there were certain common procedures that were requested. So, you know, if somebody needed tonsils or inguinal hernia repair, even a cochlear implant, we could quote those prices over the phone, a total knee replacement, you know, complex orthopedics, pediatric surgery. We would quote these prices over the phone. And we did that. We did that from day one. And what we're doing now, in 2009, I launched a website, and I just posted all of our prices online. And I did that because up until that point, the attacks we had sustained from the insurance companies and from the hospitals had all really pretty much backfired on them. And we just continued to grow, and our quality reputation continued to grow. We took care of all the Division I athletes, the professional athletes. As pediatric anesthesiologists, we had anesthetized the children of all the self-funded people that had self-funded plans in basically the whole state. So we had a great quality reputation. But in 2006, 2005, the state insurance commissioner in Oklahoma allowed the carriers to stack deductibles. So patients had no out-of-network benefit unless they had already met their in-network deductible. So that shut our doors to many of the patients who, over the phone, you know, we were quoting prices. It just made no financial sense for them to come see us. So our case volume dropped, our waiting room emptied, and I didn't know what to do except to double down. And so I launched the website in 2009, posted all of the prices online, and that's how we do business now. The first patients that arrived after I did that were Canadians. And, you know, then the next thing, we had uninsured Americans from other states. And then the self-funded world found me. And I was self-funded at that point at the Surgery Center of Oklahoma with 23 employees.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, why am I paying this carrier $20,000 a month when I can take a $100,000 deductible hit for my employees and pay a lot less? I'll take some risk. And so we were self-funded, and I kind of knew the basics of it. I didn't know the ins and outs nearly as much as I do now, but I thought these self-funded buyers should have the same sticker shock that an individual would have, and they should love what we're doing, that we're posting prices online that are a tenth of what the so-called not-for-profit hospital charges. And I wanted to start a price war. I also wanted people to use our pricing to leverage a better deal wherever they lived. And we were happy to take care of them if they'd travel to Oklahoma. But I really wanted people to be able to use our pricing for some leverage, because you couldn't get a price, I don't think, until the time I launched this website in 2009.
Yeah, and as I told you in New Orleans when we chatted after your talk, I do a lot of I'm a health insurance broker and consultant, and I specialize in self-funded plans. I actually ran a third-party administrator that did all self-funded health plans for about a decade, so that is my background. So when I was listening to you in New Orleans, of course, I was really excited to have you on my podcast because of this whole concept that you came up with. I'm like, this is what I've been preaching for years. I wish someone would have known about you earlier, right? Well, let's talk about how you compare your prices to other surgical centers, and you know, both locally and across the country. Can you tell us? You mentioned some statistics before briefly, but how do your prices compare?
Well, our prices are a fraction what other facilities charge typically. And that, when I say that, I'm comparing our prices to what a not-for-profit hospital would charge, or what a hospital outpatient department, which is a surgery center basically that a hospital controls. If a hospital owns a surgery center, they basically bill at that surgery center like they're a hospital. And the same rates apply. Medicare double pays them for everything that they do. So compared to the big hospital systems, what we have listed online is a fraction. Keep in mind, too, what I have listed online is everything. It's all inclusive. It includes surgeon, anesthesia, facility. In some cases, it includes physical therapy, DME, pain and anti-clotting meds, home health, nurse visits. I mean, some of my bundles, like joint replacement bundles, include all of those components. I'm happy to say we've been copied, and I've helped others copy us. We really didn't want to franchise. We really didn't do this because we didn't want to get rich. We really wanted to shake things up. We really wanted to change things. We wanted to be able to practice and hold our heads high in an honest, ethical way. But we wanted others to copy us. So there's no Surgery Center of Oklahoma franchise effort. There is an effort through an organization I co-founded called the Free Market Medical Association to help others copy us. And I'm happy to say many have. So the prices in many parts of the country now look a whole lot like the ones I've listed online, because these are people that I've helped, and that and people that I've helped have now helped others. And the prices to which these facilities are compared are on other websites, including the website at Free Market Medical Association called Shop Health. So there are reference-based prices out there that are not related to the illegitimate ones related to Medicare. There are actual bundle prices out there for people to look at. And I would argue that it started in 2009 when I broke the ice.
Yeah. I think you broke a lot of ice, I'd say. It's like, let's look at glaciers and everything else. But yeah, that you've actually gone way above and beyond what any, from my experience, what any physician or any surgery center would do. I actually went online. After we spoke in New Orleans and I asked you to be on this podcast, I actually went onto your website and did a little homework of my own. And I can say I was pleasantly surprised at how well you guys do those bundles and so forth. So he's not lying about this. Go onto their website and check it out, because it is. And that's why I wanted you on the podcast, because if someone wants to know exactly what something's going to cost, and of course, federal law now requires that, right? Hospitals were supposed to start posting their prices in 2021, but very few of them actually did. Still to this day, the majority of them are not publishing every one of their rates for all their services and so forth, you know, and other providers a year later. So now it's federal law, but yet you guys were doing this voluntarily since 2009, which I think is amazing. Let's talk about the types of surgical services that you guys specialize in there in Oklahoma. What do you guys offer for the most part?
Well, the Surgery Center of Oklahoma does a lot of things. We do a lot of pediatric surgery. We do a lot of orthopedics, a lot of ear, nose, and throat surgery, gynecology, urology, ophthalmology, mainly pediatric ophthalmology. We've recently started doing some plastic surgery, oral maxillofacial surgery, podiatry. I'm not sure what is left. Some spine. We do some spine surgery. So we do a whole lot of things. I think it's important to point out that what I don't think we can be great at, we just don't do. I find places that are great at things that we can't do, and we can't do it because I can't find the surgical talent, or somebody else is already doing it in a great way. And so there's a sister company that I run that is the payment clearinghouse that accepts payments for Surgery Center of Oklahoma called Atlas Billing Company, and that's a website I'd encourage people to check out, because that is where the prices are for services we don't offer. So when I launched the website and the self-funded world found us, they began to ask me if I could help them secure good quality and great pricing for services we did not offer at Surgery Center of Oklahoma. So on the Atlas Billing Company website, you'll find colon resection. You know, somebody has colon cancer. Well, and I went to, you know, one of the hospitals that originally worked pretty darn hard to put me out of business, and asked them if they were interested in business from Florida, business from Wisconsin, business from Alaska or Canada. And of course they were. That's all hospitals care about, is their market share. And the idea that I could actually send them referrals that they would otherwise not have access to was mind-blowing to them. So I'm actually able to get really great pricing from area hospitals and even facilities outside of Oklahoma for the types of services, you know, it's brain tumor, pediatric cardiac surgery, that kind of thing. We don't obviously do that in an outpatient surgery center. So we do a lot of things, but I also direct traffic all over the place for the things that we don't do. in order to help patients who reach out to us as individuals or our friends in the self-funded community. And that's about as much fun and about as exciting as anything I'm involved with.
Have those surgical centers or places that you've referred them out to, maybe an inpatient facility because you're an outpatient center, of course, do they agree to similar type payment arrangements? Was that pre-established with you before they went there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I just ask them how much they want. And it is remarkable how great the pricing is. The other thing you have to
in your world, is, not in my world. Yeah. I got to tell you, we don't see great pricing in California.
Well, when I ask, I typically get good pricing because it's either a patient they would otherwise never see, or it's a patient in their backyard that they know they're going to lose.
Yeah.
They know that employer is going to put them on a plane and pay all of the costs and waive their deductible and copay and steer them to another place that's cheaper and probably better.
Right.
So I actually have some leverage when, you know, that's unspoken. And I just ask them, you know, give me a fair price. And we invariably get pricing that is better than they offer the carriers. And that's the other value of Atlas Billing Company is we cloak facilities from better than carrier pricing that they would otherwise have to answer for. So I collect all the money. The hospitals don't deal financially with the patients at all in these episodes of care. I collect all the money and I pay everyone and nobody knows who got what. And it's wonderful. And the buyer got a great deal and they get great care. And all the people providing the care had to cough up their own pricing voluntarily. No one imposed it on them. And when you do business that way and there's no risk of non-payment, you just say, this is what I want. I'm not chasing AR. And it's great. It's just very easy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's talk about this for just a moment. I know that you mentioned self-funded plans. And as I mentioned prior to today and also today during this podcast, I do a lot of self-insurance. Obviously, a lot of my clients are self-funded. And as I said, I ran a self-funded TPA for a number of years. But your services are available to any group health plan, fully insured or self-funded, correct? And in the individuals. And you said at first you had people coming down from Canada and so forth. I grew up in Michigan, so I'm used to seeing people coming in from Canada to receive medical care. But you basically will provide services to anyone that's looking for them, correct?
Yeah, we do not file claims with the carriers. I have no insurance contracts whatsoever, and I don't want any. If a fully insured group plan wanted to buy a service from me, then they could just buy the service from me. They would know exactly what they were going to pay. I could send them an invoice, but we will not file claims. You never say never. I'll say never. The Surgery Center of Oklahoma and Atlas Billing Company has no plans whatsoever to ever actually file anything that looks like an insurance claim. We send a one-page invoice that's got the codes on it. It has the cost of the implants. I don't mark up implants. We lateral implants at cost without any markup. And we just have whoever's going to pay us pay the cost of those implants plus our website fee.
Yeah.
And my prices are the same for everyone. My price is the same for an individual as it is for a 100,000 life plan.
That's what I wanted to get toward. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, volume discounts is a big problem, and I think is a terrible way to do business, and it's the source of a lot of issues.
Yeah, so I want to talk a little bit more about this. As you know, and my listeners know, as I said, I do a lot of self insurance. We also have some clients using reference based pricing, so obviously that's tied around Medicare rates. So this is what you're doing is not that. It's a little bit different. But basically, it's a set schedule. It's a set schedule, and it's a known amount, and you can get the amount right directly from your website. I just want to make sure everybody's understanding this, everything that we've talked about before I move on. So I'm curious, People like self-funded health plans, as you said, that's already kind of been your forte. That's already been your big ticket item as far as people that want to come and get your services. Those people, are they traveling in? I'm guessing that there are people coming from potentially all over the United States to receive care at your surgical center if they're able to. This sort of what we call medical tourism, is that happening at your facility, and do you anticipate that to continue?
Yeah, about 40% of our business comes from self-funded plans. Probably another 30% comes from the cost-sharing ministries, and the rest are individuals.
Okay.
And we're paid with cashier's check, credit card, cash, Bitcoin. So we accept basically all forms of payment. 40% of the patients on any given week are not from Oklahoma. And employers and cost-sharing ministries increasingly steer patients, incentivizing them to make the decision to come either to my facility or another member of the Free Market Medical Association that's emulated what we've done. And they steer patients by waiving all out-of-pocket and paying all of their travel costs for them and a companion. And so it's very, very commonplace. And we really are a reference-based priced facility. It's a
Using a
lot of my
different reference,
self-funded.
you're just using a different reference price mechanism other than Medicare rates, right?
I mean, an ERISA lawyer, a friend of mine, has had court cases where he's defending self-funded clients who are being attacked with balance billing. And he says, "You are my reference. You are my reference-based price." And he has shown our pricing in court cases and has had real good success with that. So we just came up with it voluntarily. It wasn't inflicted on us. Viewers of your show need to know that hospitals are making money at 100% of Medicare. They're profitable at 100% of Medicare. Physicians are not. Anesthesiologists are not. So 100% of Medicare is not a terrible number for a hospital. 100% of Medicare, you can't even find an anesthesiosthesiologist who's interested.
Well,
The payment's terrible.
It really is. And I know for the facility, that's where the majority expense is anyway, for the facility. I know our clients, none of them use, a lot of times they want to go with 120, 125% of Medicare rates. Our clients all pay higher than that because they don't want the balance billing. So they start at like 100 and 140%, I think, and go up from there. Some 140 to 175 is the 140% to 175%, I think, is the average amount of our self-funded reference-based clients that they're using. And then, of course, they negotiate higher if they need to, if there's a situation that comes up. But I want to make something very clear, because this may have scared some people that are listening when they heard you say that you don't deal with insurance billing, you don't do any of that. So I want to make it clear that people can still submit claims to their health plan. For example, a self-funded employer group plan, they can get your bill. They may have prepaid this. In some cases, I'm guessing that probably the employer prepaid it, I would think. And they can then submit claims through their health plan and get, remember the old-fashioned get reimbursed for the cost of care? They can still do that, correct?
That's correct. And the way we deal with self-funded plans is 30 days, same as cash. So I don't require upfront payment from a self-funded plan. We invoice them after the care is rendered, and they typically pay us inside of 30 days. If someone has a traditional insurance plan, though, they just pay us upfront, and then they go play with Aetna and Cigna, and then they can figure out why I don't. But many times they will be, they'll be get some kind of a reimbursement if they go down that path. I'll give them the forms, but we don't do it.
And that's, you know what? Some people will say that that's a very smart way to do business, because that's kind of the biggest pain, I think, of any medical practice is the billing situation, is the whole dealing with the insurance claims and dealing with all that stuff. Again, coming from personal experience, having a family member as a surgeon and a provider and a doctor himself. Let me come back to this for just a moment. We talked a little bit about, you know, using this type of plan, using this type of payment arrangement, and using those, travel services, to come into a place like yours to get care, this medical tourism, as they call it. What about follow-up care? And I bring this up because you and I talked about this. You talked about it in New Orleans, of course, and then you and I talked about it privately after that session. So let's talk about the follow-up care, because sometimes it's good to go. Sometimes it would be perfectly fine to go to a service facility like yours in a different state and receive this surgery that they need desperately, right? And it works really well, and they can go back home and they can get some of their follow-up care done at home and so forth. And sometimes they need to stay near that facility, correct, for specific follow-up care immediately after that surgery. So can you kind of walk us through how this works, and what are the best types of services that you can provide to those, say, coming from another state, and what are the ones that maybe should not come to a different state without taking into consideration some of these things ahead of time and planning for them?
Well, it's very individualized. It's not just procedure-based. It's also a function of what sort of comorbidities some patient might have. So, for instance, for a tonsillectomy, if it's a three-year-old child and they have a history of apnea, then we would want them to stay in town, maybe even stay overnight at our surgery center. And we might have them stay in town a little bit longer than someone that did not have those types of issues. So,
which is probably still a lot less expensive than going in their own state.
Oh, yeah. So it's not just procedure specific. It's also patient specific. And we customize the care plan before and after for every single one. But we recommend, for instance, that a patient having a joint replacement, like a hip or a knee, stay in town for 5 days. Most of them don't. Most of them go home sooner than that. And we also make sure that the procedures we perform either require minimal care afterwards, or the care that can be provided by their primary care doc when they get home. And then our surgeons remain in close contact with the patients or the primary care doc or both after they go home in a more complicated case. But, there's some patients that will fly to Oklahoma and have brain tumor removed and stay in town for a month. Everyone is still better off. So it's very individualized, but we never lose contact with patients. When we ask them to stay in town for an appropriate amount of time.
Yeah, and I would think with today's technology, things like Zoom or GoToMeeting or whatever platform, Microsoft Teams or whatever they're using, I would think that with that type of video capability that a surgeon at your facility could very easily talk to their primary care physician in their own state, in their own city, and walk them through anything and see visually any complications that may have occurred or anything like that. Is that technology helping you at all in these types
it
of
is.
Situations?
It is. About a month ago, we perform cochlear implants left and right on a 14-month-old from Ohio. And when they got back, that you don't activate that implant for several weeks. And our ear surgeon coordinated very closely with the primary care doc, the pediatrician, the otologist about activating the cochlear implant. And our price for that was, I think, about $10,000 plus the cost of the implant. And they were going to be charged $250,000 at some hospital in Ohio. And it was seamless. It was one of the nicest thank you notes I've ever received came from the parents of that child, not only for the care they received at our center, but for the follow-up. And how closely they were followed and how they remained in contact with the surgeon. So, surgeries like that, if you scratch your head, you could figure out a way to get that done. And that family stayed in town for about 4 days and everything went beautifully.
Yeah. So basically, it sounds like you could take anyone for surgery for the most part, regardless of where they're from, especially with technology today. That's what it sounds like to me in most cases.
Yeah, particularly if they're willing to stay in town for an appropriate amount of time, then there are not very many people that are not candidates.
Okay, great. So what has your experience been? I think we kind of talked about this in the beginning, but I want to come back to it because this is a lot of interest to me and to our listeners. What has your experience been with the rest of the provider community? I mean, how do other surgery centers and providers feel about what you're doing? And have you made any enemies?
Yeah, I've made, I don't know. I've probably made more enemies than friends, if that mattered to me. I probably would not have gone down this path in the first place. There are a lot of anesthesiologists that do not like what I've done. They find it very threatening. There are a lot of surgeons who are hospital employees who do not like what I've done. Independent physicians who are not hospital employees tend to really like what we've done and are trying to figure out a way to copy us. The physicians that are hospital employees, not so much. In the anesthesia community, by and large, not so much. It's really funny because about 4 months ago, I was invited to New Orleans to speak to a group of anesthesiologists. And I was lucky to get out of there not covered with tomatoes. I mean, they were not happy with what I had to say, basically relaying to them what I've just relayed to you. They found it very threatening. And then I come back to New Orleans and speak to a room full of brokers and consultants and benefit administrators like you, and you guys gave me a standing ovation. So the world, has stood on its head. Hell is frozen over. A physician is welcome amongst your crowd and not amongst his own. So, but what happens is a lot of times I'm real patient with anybody who is threatened and angry because that just typically means they don't understand. And once they do understand and they get over themselves, they start asking questions, and it's clear they're asking questions so that they can figure out how they can do it. And they go through that process, and then I'm there to help them or others that I have associated with at Free Market Medical Association are there to help them because we really do want everyone to do this. Even the big hospitals, we really want them to do this. I don't think the federal government will be successful making anybody do it. I think the market will force people to do it, or they're going to lose a lot of business if they don't.
Yeah. Well, I, for one, respect everything that you've been doing and that you continue to do to try to keep the cost of care in check and to try to help these families and these people that need the surgery at an affordable rate. And I just want to applaud you because I think that everything that you guys have done has been phenomenal. And you were so far ahead of your time as far as obviously price transparency and all that sort of thing. And I just think it's amazing what you've done. And I just want to say thank you. And for those
Thank you.
listeners. And for those listeners out there saying, I want to know about this. Well, I'll ask you for some contact information in just a moment. But before I do, I just want to say from myself, from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for everything that you've done. I think you're doing a great service to the industry and to those people out there that desperately need care. And then I think of those people coming in from, as you mentioned, coming in from places like Canada that might have to wait 18 months for their surgery or 10 months, and their condition is not going to get better in that time. It's going to get a lot worse. And knowing that they have an option that they can come to the United States, come to places like the surgical center of Oklahoma and get this kind of care at a very good rate, and have excellent care, I just think that's great. So I just want to say thank you very much for what you do. So,
Thank you.
oh, you're welcome. So if our listeners should want to contact you, which I think a lot of them will, or your surgical center, of course, how would they do that? Can you provide a phone number? Can you provide your website information?
Sure. The phone number is 405-475-0600. They can go to our website, which is surgerycenterok.com. When they go to that website, there's actually a tab that says Request a Specialist. If you want to email me directly, my email's all over the website. Email me at ksmith@surgerycenterok.com, and I will send you a complete list of the pricing with associated CPT codes in an Excel spreadsheet, not just for Surgery Center of Oklahoma, but for Atlas Billing as well. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, LinkedIn. We're everywhere, I think.
Well, that's a great thing. That's not a bad thing. Well, I want to thank you so much for being my guest today. I really, really, really appreciate you being on my show today and telling everybody about what you guys do. So thank you very, very much.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. To all our listeners out there, please stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned for the next episode of the Benefits Executive Roundtable. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for compliance tips, cost containment ideas, new trends, and decision-making tools. This podcast is produced by Advanced Benefit Consulting, Anaheim, California. All views expressed are those of the host or interviewees and not necessarily those of Advanced Benefit Consulting. Information contained herein should not be construed as legal advice. We always recommend that you consult with your legal counsel as situations do vary. Ms. Koshu can be reached at 714-693-9754 extension 3. Toll free at 866-658-3835. Or visit our website at advancedbenefitconsulting.com.